Peak Wealth Management proudly presents Finding True Wealth with Nick Hopwood, where we believe by providing education and guidance, we help our clients make sound financial decisions, which ultimately puts them on a path towards their definition of true wealth. Now, here is your certified financial planner professional and founder of Peak Wealth Management, Nick Hopwood.
Hey everyone, welcome to Finding True Wealth. I'm your host, Nick Hopwood. Today, we're going to be talking with John Deal from Hartford Funds. He has an awesome job of working with Dr. Joe Coughlin at the MIT Age Lab. Yes, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology has an Age Lab. And at this Age Lab, they study and research a lot of cool stuff. So if you have access to this episode on peakwm.com, we're going to put up some collateral along with this podcast, which has a cool video, which is very entertaining, along with their white paper, which has a ton of useful new technologies and apps that you can use today. So I'm going to go ahead and bring in John. Welcome to the show, John.
Oh, thanks, Nick.
I'm happy to have John Deal here. He's the Senior Vice President of Strategic Markets with Hartford Funds. And what that really means, in my opinion, is that he's the liaison to the MIT Age Lab. Is that right?
That's right, Nick. I've been working with the Age Lab now, probably about 15 years.
So the Age Lab was founded by Dr. Joe Coughlin in 1999 at MIT. What exactly have they been doing since then?
Oh, great question, Nick. So our original involvement with the MIT Age Lab actually came through the auto insurance industry, of which our parent company is a pretty major player. In fact, what they were interested in back in 1999 was how aging and auto accidents seemed to be running in parallel. And the original relationship with MIT began studying what could be done, especially in the area of automotive technology, that could help reduce accident rates among aging Americans. And so today, maybe some of your listeners are driving automobiles that are equipped with blind spot warning systems or automatic braking systems or smart headlights. See, all those technologies actually benefit aging drivers very much because they allow for compensation for weakening muscles, slower reflexes, even more restricted neck rotation as we age. And so incorporating those technologies has definitely been a help to aging drivers. But in the early 2000s, I'd say 2005 or so, we began a new strain of research with MIT, which I headed up since the time that we started it, which was looking at financial services, retirement planning, retirement readiness, as it adapts to a new generation and kind of a new population of aging Americans who will be aging very differently than our parents and grandparents.
So the Age Lab started with this automotive focus, and it's really morphed into so much more. And I really enjoyed the presentation that I heard you give last month about new technologies and how they'll change retirement. And so let's focus on that today. What are you finding out with new technology as it relates to people in retirement?
Well, I think, Nick, that, you know, technology is part of our lives no matter how old we are. But we know that as we age, sometimes we have a tendency to shy away from newer technologies because they seem too complicated or we don't really know what they're intended to do. I would just note a word of caution here, and that is if the entire world around us is communicating, transporting, and transacting using new technologies, aka a smartphone versus a flip phone, and yet we're resistant to picking up the new technology, we have a chance of, or we risk, isolating ourselves from those around us. And so one of the things we do notice is that Americans over age 60 are among one of the most rapid growing populations of people adopting new technology. Now, we're not using these technologies necessarily to keep up with the financial markets, but what are we using them for? Yeah, to keep up with the grandchildren, because if you don't text or email or share Google calendars, we run the risk of falling off the social agenda. But this technology holds so much more in store for aging Americans to free us up, to give us more choices, more opportunities, if we take the time to educate ourselves a little bit about what these technologies are intended to do.
It's outstanding. And it applies to so many areas of daily life. We're going to put up a video that I think is just outstanding, a little cartoon showing
a woman and how she uses her technology as a retiree from the moment she wakes up until the moment she goes to sleep. We'll have that posted on our website, peakwm.com, the link to it. But John, what, you know, how are these technologies affecting our daily life every day? And what do we see for the future?
Well, in many ways, Nick, we use technology every day. Sometimes we don't even realize it. And what's interesting, just when you said about the little cartoon video that was produced by the MIT H-Lab, I think it is kind of important to point out that the MIT H-Lab tells us that men and women differ in the way they use technology. They tell us that men, as we approach age 70, we may regard technology as kind of useless. And as we approach age 80, we may regard it as a threat. Now, I know that sounds kind of silly, but I know a number of my friends who are aging into those categories oftentimes will shun the use of, let's say, GPS navigation in their cars, or the use of Amazon or some other technology in terms of shopping, so on and so forth. But what MIT does tell us is that women will become more, maybe not more rapid adopters of technology, but they will become power users of technology once they understand how technology can make our lives easier, help us manage our schedules easier, and just make it more convenient in terms of how to do things. So I guess, Nick, it's a kind of a special challenge to your male clients out there. For men especially, we have to be intentional about understanding a little bit about what these technologies are and how they work. And I think one of the best ways to do that is talk to the younger generations, right? Because our children and grandchildren oftentimes are using these technologies that, if we really thought about our own lives, whether it's obtaining meals, or whether it's getting from point A to point B, or whether it's just staying in communication with people, I think that's what these technologies are really important for. So, long answer to your question, Nick, but as we think about technology use in our daily lives, the MIT H-Lab has kind of distilled down 5 different areas where technology will impact the way we age. And those areas are, 1, technology will help us stay on the job to the extent that we want to. 2, technology will keep us connected to friends and family. 3, technology will keep us mobile and give us access to the things that we want to have access for. Number 4 is that the house that keeps itself, technology in the home to make life easier. And number 5 is technology that will help us monitor our health. So, Nick, I think we can spend a little time going a little bit deeper on each of those 5, but as a broad overview, those are the 5 areas.
I'm particularly interested in the technology to help us stay on the job. And as I witness my clients and their families, I'm seeing people retire and they're finding that they can't just retire to the beach and they can't just golf every day because they get bored, they get tired of doing the same thing. And ultimately, I found from people and from a lot of reading and talking with people like you that meaningful work is more rewarding than leisure. And it doesn't mean you have to work to get paid. It can be volunteering or, you know, staying connected some way, but providing meaning to people's life. So how are people using new technologies to stay on the job longer, so to speak?
Sure. Well, Nick, you said the word, right? The word is boredom. And for many retirees today, they're playing off the scripts that they saw play out with their parents and grandparents. But many of these cases, parents and grandparents didn't live to the ages that we may now find ourselves living to. And so trying to fill 20, 25 years with something meaningful, it's probably going to be more than golf or some other hobby that you may have. Because as you mentioned, purpose and meaning is extremely important. So how can technology do this? Well, in a number of ways. First of all, we're going to use technology to keep us up to date in terms of education, whether it's in a field that we are currently proficient in or whether it's learning something new. I mean, when you think of things like podcasts, for example, or even the use of YouTube, I mean, many of us will go out and buy a product now where they won't even issue a user's manual anymore. We'll be pointed towards YouTube to understand how these things work. So in terms of acquiring knowledge, understanding the apps that can connect us with knowledge bases And that's not even to mention there are these, there are now technologies that make available what are called MOOCs, massive open online courses, where you can actually go online with companies like Coursera or edX, for example, is one that I think MIT and Harvard University uses. And you can actually monitor course content provided by these institutions of higher learning. If we're going to stay on the job longer, and when we say stay on the job, you mentioned it, Nick, it's not just paid compensated work. It may be volunteering or whatever. We're going to have to stay up to date with things. And so information delivery. Interestingly, we know AARP tells us that about 65% of Americans intend to work, or of baby boomers intend to work past age 65 or never retire. But the more interesting number connected to that, 34% say they're going to do it for the enjoyment. Right, our work provides us oftentimes one of the main sources of social connection. So when people say, I want to continue working, and it's not necessarily because of the money. It's usually for that social interaction. And technology may keep us connected at work no matter where we are or how often we want to work, when we want to work. If you've ever heard of something called the gig economy, these new companies that are employing people kind of on a very flexible basis, when they want to work, how they want to work, kind of like Uber, right? Uber allows people who qualify to drive automobiles for them in ride-sharing services, but an Uber driver can turn the service off, flip it on whenever they want to work, don't want to work. They could work for a week, disappear for 3 months, work for another week. However, it's very flexible, and this is one of the things we see technology allowing us to do as we move forward. Work when we want, from wherever we want, on the schedule that we want. So definitely one of the most important reasons technology will help us age.
You know, I come from the generation where I actually went to college and sat in the lecture hall, but I just took a class through the Michigan Business School about leadership, and it was all online. And what a great experience that was. So I do believe that, you know, people can take online courses and get the same out of it that they might have, like, you know, old school brick and mortar university.
No doubt.
So another area was technology in the house. And I, you know, of course, for Christmas, I got the Alexa, I forget what they call the box, but it's Alexa. And so I went out and I bought some of those Philips Hue light bulbs, connected it to the Wi-Fi, and I've been using Alexa for my shopping lists and turning on and off the lights, and it's a lot of fun. The kids love it. We play music through it, and it's so easy. So I think that we're right on the edge of this revolution inside the house. What else do you see in the future besides Alexa, and how can that help the aging American?
Sure. So, well, first to comment on Alexa or the Amazon Echo, right? And obviously there are other devices similar to it. But, you know, for some folks, Alexa is kind of fun and a convenience. And as you mentioned, can really add comfort to the home through controlling lighting, so on and so forth. But as we think about aging Americans, think about someone who is impacted by a mobility-limiting disease like Parkinson's disease, for example, where just navigating the home can be more of a challenge. Being able to control security and climate and lighting through voice-activated systems like Alexa may actually make that home, if not more comfortable, more livable as we age with some of those conditions. But beyond that, I think, Nick, the area I'm very interested in is the area of robotics. Now, when I say robotics, I don't want you to think Danger Will Robinson type of robots. There are now robots being designed for very specific purposes. So many people are familiar with the Roomba, which is the vacuum cleaning robot, which will go around and vacuum your floors. And, you know, once the Roomba begins to run low on power, some models actually make their way back to the docking station where they recharge again to go out and help finish the job. So routine tasks around the house, which you don't think about it, but, you know, as we do a lot of the housekeeping, for example, sweeping, cleaning, things like that, you know, bending over to make sure we get under couches or in corners or whatever, can be more difficult depending on, you know, physical condition. B, may actually risk a fall in the home. So beyond that, though, I mean, there are a host of robots, some of which will just make you shake your head and laugh. But let me tell you, my wife, for my birthday last year, got me a rain gutter cleaning robot. It's called a Looj, L-O-O-J. And this thing's on a little remote control. It's got a little auger on the front of it with rubber blades and brushes. And it's on these little tracks. I put it in the rain gutter. And with my remote control, I send it down the gutter. And when it's done throwing sticks and twigs and leaves out of the gutter, I call it back. Well, you know, I still have to get up on my ladder, which obviously is a risk. But one thing it does save me, I'm no longer repositioning the ladder 3 and 4 times and making several trips up and down that ladder. So as we think about these technologies, and it's not just robotics, there's also new devices meant to hook into what's called the Internet of Things. So for example, your refrigerator will be connected to, you know, to your Wi-Fi system so that, Nick, you mentioned putting items on a shopping list. What if with a push of a button, you could have a grocery delivery service then bring those goods and services to you? It opens up a whole new world. Not only, again, I would caution people in terms of convenience. Sometimes you hear about these things and you think, how lazy are people? But, Nick, I know you're in Michigan, right? And I know during those winter months, you have your share of questionable weather up there. And, you know, if you have to get to a grocery store just to pick up a few items, the ease of doing it by ordering from your refrigerator versus having to trek out, get in your car, get back, carrying groceries, so on and so forth, it can be not only a convenience, but also it can help mitigate some of the risk that we would have of just getting around in weather like that.
It's, you know, saving so much time as well. I mean, think about this. You drive to the store, you walk up and down, you buy stuff that you don't really need. You have to take it off the shelf, put it in the cart, take it from the cart onto the belt, from the belt back into the cart, from the cart into the trunk, then the trunk into the kitchen countertop, and then from the countertop into the pantry or refrigerator. And it's a ridiculous long process if you really think about it.
No, absolutely.
If you can push a button, have someone bring it to you, you pay a premium, but I think it's probably worth it. When you're telling the story about the Looj, what came to my mind was Chevy Chase in Christmas Vacation with that ladder. Of course,
that's right.
You know, he was putting up lights. He wasn't cleaning the gutter, but he was moving the ladder one too many times, I think.
Yeah, oh yeah, for sure.
Another big area is monitoring health. And, you know, in the last few years, there's kind of been a revolution with the Fitbit and the Apple Watch, monitoring steps and keeping track and sharing with your friends and having a step competition. But these things are really taking it to the next level now with monitoring your heart rate and, you know, what's next here? Are you going to be able to wear a watch that replaces your doctor or what?
Well, I think what you'll find is that technology is going to aid medical services professionals. So especially from a diagnostic standpoint, maybe many of the things that we do in our doctor's office today will be done in the home through in-home technologies, whether it's your mirror or your scale or your toilet or whatever these things are that can now potentially be built to put in diagnostic software to help monitor, are we taking medications correctly? Is our heartbeat on target? So on and so forth. But Nick, let me share with you a little story about technology and monitoring health that really touched me, that just amazes me. So I was giving a similar talk in Florida, and I had a couple, I would say they were right around age 40, pull me aside after my talk. They said, John, we just have to share with you how technology is changing the way we're managing our health. They said, our 10-year-old son is type 1 diabetic, and until about 6 months ago, we were taking needle sticks day and night to measure his blood glucose. And then we were introduced to a technology called a continuous glucose monitor. And what happened, they said, was there's a small element that's implanted under the skin of their son's abdomen. And that element constantly monitors blood glucose and now not only monitors it, but transmits it wirelessly back to mom's cell phone and son's cell phone. So this interconnectivity, what the mom told me was, now we were at a private club for this education event that I was speaking at. And she told me that right before I started to speak, her phone started to buzz because she got an alert that her son's glucose levels were dropping. So she picked up her phone, she texted her son, who was at a friend's sleepover, and said, Jimmy, your glucose is dropping. He texted back, I know, Mom, I'm on it, got it handled. And wow. she said, furthermore, this technology is now connected wirelessly to his insulin pump, which is shrunken in size so much that he can carry it in his pocket. You know what? He looks like every other kid in the school. He looks like every other kid at the sleepover, and it gives him constant monitoring. So she said it's changing the way we age. And so I think keeping aware, especially for people who have specific conditions, always have an interest in what these new technologies are that are coming down the pike that may help us see better, that may help us monitor a chronic condition, that who knows what the future holds. But, you know, the mapping of the human genome, the advances in technology, just marrying all those things together adds up. And if any of our listeners are in the healthcare industry, they could probably tell me this better than I could tell them. We're in the midst of a healthcare revolution in our country, and technology is very much going to be a part of that.
That's a remarkable story. I think that when you think about the example of little Jimmy, it's totally life-changing. And you know, we could probably spend another hour on that topic alone.
No, sure.
You know, I think we're up against it, John, but I want to thank you for sharing your story here with us on Finding True Wealth. These things are going to change the life for people who are retired and people who are, you know, far from retirement, like little Jimmy. But you guys have put together a white paper, Hartford Funds, in conjunction with MIT Age Lab, that we're going to share, which has a ton of examples about different apps that you can use on your phone and how you can tap into some of these new technologies, right?
Absolutely. And what I would say is the way to learn about technology is first and foremost to talk about it. Talk to your friends, talk to your family. What apps are they using? Did they buy an Amazon Echo or an other type of device? Are they using technologies in their automobile? How do they work? How do they use them? And last but not least, I would talk to you, Nick. I mean, I know you've got plenty of interaction with technology yourself, let alone the benefit of talking with a financial advisor about things other than just straight financials, is that, Nick, I'm guessing you work with other people who are using technologies to help them age, and you get to see and hear real-life stories and examples of what people think of these technologies.
Yeah, we sure do. You know, it's not just managing money and managing your financial plan. It's helping you make good decisions all around, and if technology can assist you, we're all about that. So, John, thanks again for joining us. John is the Senior Vice President of Strategic Markets with Hartford Funds, and he's the Hartford liaison with the MIT Age Lab. And we're very grateful to have you, John. We appreciate the time, and I hope you have a great day.
You've been listening to the Peak Financial Minute with Nick Hopwood. You can subscribe to this podcast through iTunes and the Android Marketplace or by visiting www.peakwm.com. Peak Wealth Management is your premier wealth management partner. Plan, protect, peak. Securities offered through Regulus Advisors, LLC. Member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Peak Wealth Management, LLC, a state of Michigan registered investment advisor. Peak Wealth Management, LLC is independent of Regulus Advisors.